No, because God would always be the first being, whereas he wouldn't necessarily be the first cause that he ever created.
Yeah, but would you call the first being if you ignore the being, so.
Well, in a way, absolutely, couldn't you still? You couldn't, but...
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, sometimes I play with the second central sense, right? And I say, there's something interesting here, right? The second sense of before was before and being, right? And where you say, this can be without that, but not vice versa. Mm-hmm. Well, it's rather nice to be able to say that God is not only before the things as a cause before an effect, right? But he's before other things in another sense. He can be without them, but not vice versa. Now, Thomas, in the second book of the Summa Cana Gentiles, he'll spend a lot of time showing that God doesn't produce the universe by natural necessity. Mm-hmm. So God could be without having created anything at all. Mm-hmm. That's entirely a free act on the part of God that he created us or anything else at all. Right? And then you realize that God can be without what? Other things. But they can't be without him, right? Mm-hmm. That's something different than saying he's a cause of that. These are a very important truth about that. Huh? But that way of understanding first is suggested by saying he's the first being, you think of before and being, and you think of that second sense. But in the context here, in the context I see, the Summas, isn't he saying that it's better than all the other things? It's more perfect, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. Notice that last sentence there. Therefore, there's something before all things, right, that is a cause of their being and goodness and their very perfection, right? Huh? He's thinking of God as what? The most perfect, the most good, the best, right? And therefore being before all them in the fourth sense. Huh? Usually I get through, you know, those five senses of before. I say, clearly God is before all other things as a cause and before an effect. But he's also before all the things in the second sense. He can be without other things, but they can't be without him. He's also before all the things in the fourth sense of being better than all things. But in the third sense, in the discourse of reason, he's not before all the things. Huh? Because we know God from his effects. Huh? Mm-hmm. So the effects. Huh? And you got to be careful about the first sense, because that's in time. God's not in time. Although there's some sense in which you could say God is before other things in duration, but not certainly in time. Right? So you have to qualify that a lot. Huh? But clearly in the second, the fourth, and the crowning sense, God is before other things, right? But Thomas seems to use it. Every time he uses that word, they try to get a little sense of how he's using it. But he seems to, you know, associate the idea of primum ens with the perfection of God. Huh? Okay, I'm not altogether sure of that, but I think there's a little part of the difference here. And it's closer to this fourth argument than the earlier ones, huh? Especially the first two, right? You think very much of a first mover, first maker, first cause, right? Mm-hmm. But in the third one a bit, because you don't use so much the word cause there, as much as though you do speak of having a cause or necessity, right? But the emphasis is upon being the necessary being to itself. It's kind of you're the first being, right? And in here I had some of the sense of the first being, right? So I would tend to conclude more from the first two that God is the first cause. And from the third to the fourth, I'd be closer to saying he's the first being, although you could say he's the first cause in those two, because he does bring in cause. Mm-hmm. And of course, the word necessary is taken up with the words for cause in the fifth book of wisdom. Huh? Mm-hmm. But okay, I'm kind of rambling now, but you see that I think about his words, you know, around there. These words, a couple of words in my mind, and trying to figure out exactly why Thomas says that, huh? Mm. He does use the word cause here in the third and fourth, too, so I mean, I don't want to exaggerate that, huh? Mm. but closer. Now the fifth way is taken from the governance of things, huh? For we see that some things which lack knowledge, right? Mm-hmm. To wit, natural bodies, act for an end, right? Which appears from this that always, or for the most part, in the same way they act. Huh? That they might achieve that which is best, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, now this is going back to the first argument that Aristotle gives for nature acting for an end. Whence it is clear that not by chance, but by intention, they arrive at an end. But those things which do not have knowledge cannot tend towards an end except as directed by someone knowing and understanding. In Thomas's example, the arrow tend towards a target because the artist, I mean the, they call him
Archer.
Archer, yeah, Archer. Kind of interesting, Archer. I don't know that word came from
Archer.
Archer, okay. Therefore, there is someone understanding from whom all natural things are what? Or by whom all natural things are to an end. Mm-hmm. And this we call what? God. Huh? Now, sometimes Thomas refers back to John Damascene using this argument, right? You can say it goes all the way back in some way to Anaxagoras, huh? Okay.
Mm. Arcus, Arcus, bow, rainbow.
Okay. Now let's go to the objections. The first objection was about the good and the bad. Huh? He's very brief about this, but he'll be talking about the bad more at length later on. He gets into talking about God's goodness, right? He'll talk about goodness in general and so on. But in the third book of the Summa Cum Gentiles, he goes a lot into the bad, right? And in the Questiones Disputatae de Malo. To the first, therefore, it should be said, as Augustine says in the Enchiridion, that God, since he is what? Most good, in no way would allow anything of bad in his works, unless he was so omnipotent and good that he might well make things what?
Well, make them well, even for evil.
Yeah. For this pertains to the infinite goodness of God, that he allows evils to be, so you might, what? This is from them goods, huh? And there's some goods that couldn't be without, what?
Evil.
So the good of the martyr, right? Mm-hmm. Couldn't be without the good of the persecutor. And Augustine says we need heretics for theology to develop. So he brings good out of that, right? Huh? Okay. And this person who annoys you, you know, helps you to gain patience, huh? If you use rightly, huh? But they say the good man, you know, uses even bad things well, right? Or the bad man uses even good things bad. Okay. So this is not the time for Thomas to go into a great defense of, you know, divine providence and so on. But he will in other places go much more into this, right? So you shouldn't think this. You know, sometimes they quote the great Boethius, huh? And he says, a man should argue not that if there's evil, then God doesn't exist. He should argue, if there's evil, God does exist, huh? Because there couldn't be evil without the what? Transcending the good order, right? Mm-hmm. And therefore, there must be a cause of that good order that leads you back to God, huh? Mm-hmm. So they should argue, if there's evil in the world, there must be good. If there's good, there must be the cause of the good. Therefore, there must be a God. So he kind of turns the tables on them, you know. But he's quite a mind Boethius, huh? Mm-hmm. I think you could say that these three great thinkers there, Boethius, Albert the Great, and Thomas Aquinas, they all think that Plato and Aristotle are the chief philosophers, huh? Mm-hmm. Augustine, you know, talks about the Platonists, but I don't think he knows, you know, Aristotle that much. But by the time of Boethius, who could go study in Alexandria there, you know, and so on. It's very clear from his works that he's influenced by Plato and Aristotle, right? Regards him as the chief philosophers. And Albert the Great says you can't